If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
In less than 1 month, Missouri voters will choose whether or not to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in the state through a new constitutional amendment. Amendment 3, also known as Legal Missouri 2022, would allow those 21 and up to use marijuana beyond medical use. Politically Speaking is delving into this amendment, speaking with both a proponent and an opponent of the measure. On this episode of the podcast, Democratic Representative Ashley Bland Manlove joins the show to talk about her opposition to Amendment 3, despite the fact that she is in favor of legalizing marijuana for adult use in Missouri. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
Hello and welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, State House and Politics reporter Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host. He is the political correspondent for St. Louis Public Radio.
Jason Mertz, mom.
And joining us today via Zoom, she is the Democratic State Representative for the 26th District, which covers part of Kansas City.
State Representative Ashley Bland Manlove.
Welcome back to the show, Representative. Before we get started, we'd love for you to just remind our listeners about you and the district that you represent.
Oh, sure. Hey, guys. Like I said, Rep. Bland Manlove here, hailing from the best side of the state, the west side, Kansas City. Home of the Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl winning team. But I actually represent the 26th district, which right now is Cleaver 2 to 99th, homes to Prospect, if that means anything for you guys over there. But my district has drastically changed and it will now be Gregory to 99th, homes to Cerner. People around here know what that means.
Also, just as a note for our listeners, there is some kind of construction happening above me at the Capitol. So if you hear any banging while I'm talking, that is why. And then also, this podcast is going to deviate a little bit from what we typically have a representative on, which is we talk about kind of a bunch of different topics. But this time we're going to focus on Amendment 3, which is centered around the issue of adult use marijuana. So let's kind of get started with that. My first question for you, Representative Bland Manlove, is why are you opposed to Amendment 3?
Okay, well, first let me clarify. I am not opposed to the cannabis industry, nor am I opposed to the initiative petition process, which we always have to keep an eye on here in the state of Missouri. but I'm opposed to this specific petition. And also let me say, it's a petition, not legislation. This is a petition. So I'm specifically against this petition because, you know, the people who were most affected by the war on drugs appear to be an afterthought in this petition. It's kind of like, they dangled this sweetheart deal of, oh, you'll get out of jail. But then what? There's no repair in this bill. There's no equity in this bill. Or any of the things that we're actually looking for in the social justice, you know, cannabis reform platform.
There has been an argument that the legislature should have passed something as opposed to having an initiative petition, but they didn't. Isn't this amendment a natural consequence of legislative inaction?
Oh, definitely. Myself, I co-sponsored the Cannabis Freedom Act, which was sponsored by Republican Representative Ron Hicks out of the St. Charles area, something you should not hear happening. And the legislature was unfortunately influenced by a certain lobbyist named Tom Robbins, who works for a certain company, Mocan Trade, who's pushing a certain initiative, Legal Mo 2022. And so we had, you know, basically ideas from the speaker actually saying he wanted this to go through, and there were roadblocks all along the way. And that happens a lot in our legislature, because our legislator votes to vote, quote unquote, dry. As we're, you know, a Southern state and Republican held, so they want to have their quote unquote moral standards. So even bingo is in our Constitution because of our legislator being our legislator not doing what they needed to do. So I understand that this is a natural consequence, but that still doesn't mean it's right. And that still doesn't mean that I support it.
One of the criticisms of Amendment 3 is that people with marijuana convictions need to petition for expungement. Couldn't that problem be solved if a governor, you know, pardoned people with marijuana-related convictions?
It would, but then there would still be, you know, on the books, there, it wouldn't change anything on the books. It wouldn't change the criminal statute. It would just, you know, kind of be everybody who's already been through that problem. And then a lot of the times, you know, again, there's no repair for that time in jail that was unnecessary because it was actually a nonviolent crime or whatever that was. So, yes, the governor could act upon it, but then that wouldn't stop everything that's going on. And the problem with putting this in our Constitution is that the legislator cannot go back and fix it. Everybody keeps saying, oh, yeah, well, let's pass this. I know what's wrong, but we can go back and fix it. Not unless you have a multi-million dollar campaign that can, again, sway the vote. That cannot be changed in the legislature.
I have lots of follow-ups. The first one being, yeah, this conversation on pardoning for marijuana offenses recently has come back into the spotlight after President Biden recently said he would be pardoning federal marijuana offenses. So there has been a call, including from Missouri Representative Cori Bush, for governors to do the same with state offenses. I mean, when do you even think this is the realm of possibility with Governor Parson or other governors of Missouri?
You know, it's been a fight. It's been a fight with criminal justice and our current governor and legislature. We've kind of had to, you know, kind of tooth and nail it to get them to make moves. So I don't know if that's necessarily an option for us. Hence why this just needs to be passed on a federal level. But we need to find out what system we're going to use here in Missouri that's going to make sure our mom and pops stores and grows get the same advantages as, you know, multi-states and these corporate investors.
Yeah. And even if, you know, the legislature were to look at state offenses, you know, how does Amendment 3 complicate those conversations?
Well, Amendment 3 kind of picks and chooses who gets expunged and who doesn't automatically, as they keep saying. So if you're out and you've served your time already, there is a timeline for your record to be expunged. If you're on probation or parole, you finish your time and then it can be expunged. But if you're in, if you're serving right now, you have to, you know, still appeal to the court. And it's based off of judicial discretion, which we know does not work out for poor and melanated peoples. So really, and then again, it only clears the marijuana charge. So most marijuana charges come with a paraphernalia charge, ACA charge, a DUI, something like that. That's also a hindrance to you moving forward in your life.
And if, you know, the Missouri legislature all of a sudden, you know, gets the kind of motivation in order to, like, this year we're going to pass marijuana policy, would there be greater workarounds and restrictions that you would have to face with Amendment 3, you know, if it were to pass when passing legislation?
Oh, definitely, because Amendment 3 is in the Constitution. So any legislation would be null and void because it would then go up against the Constitution, which takes rank. And what is not included in Amendment 3 is any banking provisions saying that if banking goes federal, you know, as there was in the Cannabis Act where it said we'll allow state banks to handle cannabis in interactions. Or transactions. So there is, and there's still the equity, the issue of equity and banking and just even melanated and poor people having access to the capital to start the business, let alone where they're supposed to put those funds. So none of that is addressed in this cannabis, in this petition, nor is interstate commerce. It says interstate commerce will stay the same, which is none. So that could be a huge hindrance. If this is passed on a legal, on a federal level, and we're stuck with these binding prohibitions in our Constitution.
So an argument I've heard against Amendment 3 is that current license holders will have an advantage if Amendment 3 passes. I actually explained that to somebody and they were like, so what? I'm still going to be able to get marijuana. Why would I care how the system is structured? What would you say to that person?
That speaks to kind of the mindset that's going on in the world right now. There's a lot of, like, I'll say selfishness. People are so much in survival mode that they're not able to think forwardly and generationally. And it is our responsibility to think about the generations that come after us. So you might still have access to it, but even if you have access to it, it'll be a higher price because it's not an open market. And basically the current license holders will have an advantage because in this petition, you can have a medical license and we'll call it adult use. You can have adult use licenses as well. So if your medical use license and application stood the test of DOJ investigations, FBI investigations, Supreme Court decisions about the licenses and the medical program, you just copy and paste that and you're good to go for the adult use program. And that's not fair.
Kind of along those same lines, like, what would you say to people who are like, yeah, this is not a perfect petition by any means, but we're not going to get another chance to legalize marijuana anytime soon?
Why wouldn't we? This was just, this was a group of people who decided to put their money together and and make a campaign. And that's how all campaigns are formed. So I know I will be working diligently, not only to stop Amendment 3, but then to work on the backside for the next election cycle or two, probably two, because it does cost a lot of money. I'm starting at zero, working hard nationally to campaign to get us the initiative petition that we do deserve, which would theoretically just be taking the Cannabis Freedom Act and taking out that anti-trans language that Representative Nick Schroer put in there. And there are some other provisions that were discussed by myself, Representative Wiley Price and Representative Ron Hicks, that actually didn't make it in because of timing and things like that. So putting that to its full potential and putting that on the ballot so people can see what, you know, groundbreaking led policy from the initiative petition platform looks like and what we could really be doing nationally.
Another criticism is that people could still be fined if they're caught smoking marijuana in public. Why is that aspect of the law problematic or of the petition?
So that is perfect. Okay, so in the original, so everybody knows that this is Amendment 13. So this is just a medical amendment expanded to now include a medical program and an adult use program. So the medical program said you cannot consume in public spaces that are not designated for consumption. So that was already out there. You can't smoke in public. But because of the prosecutors that we have in our major metropolitan areas, they said that wouldn't necessarily be a priority, especially while gun violence and stuff is so high. So they were going to focus on that and not on the cannabis, which was great. But now that in this second version, a civil fine of $100 has been added to if you have a medical card or if you're using it or if it's on the adult use side, that then incentivizes law enforcement to act where they weren't before. And typically, just from, you know, observations in my life, when people are consuming cannabis, it's normally a group. There's normally other things going on. So that can lead to escalations that we didn't know, happening. And, you know, you guys have Michael Brown over there, the start of the, you know, Black Lives Matter movement that came from a police interaction, a simple police interaction. So not only am I concerned for that, but it's also a huge waste of law enforcement, like time. Like, it's a huge waste of money to have law enforcement tracking people down or pulling people over. And it can also become a cash cow. You know, we've been fighting against red light tickets and, you know, all throughout the municipalities being used as a cash cow. And I don't want this to become the new cash cow either.
There's also some criticism on how there's a limit to the amount of marijuana that someone can possess under this amendment. Isn't that being done to prevent people from selling it outside of the regulated system, or kind of, you know, if you want to talk about that?
Sure. I guess that might be why, but I wouldn't necessarily, it doesn't make financial sense to go buy out of a dispensary and then go sell that on the black market. You're not, or on the illicit market. You're not going to make up a revenue off of that. The way to stop the illicit market is by putting regulations in on the grower side, like and testing in on the grower side, seed to sale, you know, tracking systems like that. That's the way to stop the illicit market, which is what did not happen in Oklahoma, and why they're so riddled with illicit cannabis mixed in with their adult use cannabis. So, you know, and I don't really know what those markers are for, but I know that putting those limits in has created, they also put, you know, more penal, civil fines and there's actually misdemeanors. So this petition actually only legalizes, it does not decriminalize. And that's the whole thing that, you know, everybody in this cannabis movement, especially from a social justice aspect, equity aspect, have been talking about.
Throughout this conversation, you've argued that Amendment 3 doesn't do enough to solve racial disparities in the marijuana industry. So I would like you to talk about what policies you would support that would close some of those gaps that you were alluding to.
Sure. So all throughout American history, every time certain demographics have been given a leg up, the GI Bill, the Homestead Act. Those demographics were given funds up front. It wasn't on the back end. So like in the Cannabis Freedom Act, we said minority-owned businesses and woman-owned businesses could get a loan from the application fees at the front part so they could get up and running and be with the pack and not be behind the pack. Instead, the legal mo decided their equity was going to be giving you a kid's meal called a micro license and telling you to live and survive off that, and then telling you that you wouldn't be able to give up or you wouldn't be able to upgrade to the full size license until somebody else gives away theirs, actually until two people give away theirs, and you have a cap on growing that only gives you $200,000 worth of revenue. That's not enough to grow a business. And you have to wait 500 days until after everybody else has gotten their license. And then you have to wait again for a micro grower to harvest because the micro businesses can only interact with other micro businesses. So they have to wait for the micro grower to come up so the micro dispensary can have product on the shelf. Nor can the micro business have several types of licenses where the big licenses can have a grower, a manufacturer, and a dispensary, and the transportation. The micro licenses only get one of those. So there's no vertical movement. There's no room for growth. Additionally, in the Cannabis Freedom Act, we put there, as I said, there's no repair in this initiative petition. So in the Cannabis Freedom Act, we said, hey, if you are getting out of cannabis charges, you can go into a halfway house situation where we'll teach you botany and we'll teach you the things that you need to know in the marijuana industry so that you can get into it. But, you know, use your powers for good. And we can all have this tax revenue that comes off of it. There is nothing like that. And actually, the initiative petition says it will put you back where you were as if the charge never happened. Well, where I was in the beginning was a place that made me commit a crime. So that's not a great place to put me back. And also, I've been in jail for 10 years, or I've been fighting with this for 10 years. So you can't repair that because there's not a great education system within, you know, our municipalities, and it's just now becoming open within our state. So there's no repairing, and that's what it should look like versus what it does look like.
Now, you mentioned the realities of putting this in the Constitution, that if this passes, the legislature cannot just pass a law in statute and fix some of the things that you feel are problematic. But is it possible, if Amendment 3 passes and the legislature finds things that they can improve in it, couldn't they put a constitutional change on the ballot in 2024?
Yes. There is a House joint resolution that can go on the ballot later on. But since there's very little continuity between and the legislature on this topic, I don't see one of those being able to necessarily pass. So yes, the legislature can try to change it. But as you saw, you know, with the medical program, that we tried to have hearings with the Department of Health and with the Department of Health about the licenses, about the application process. And all of those were met with deaf ears, or were set, or were turned around legally, saying that's not what the Constitution says, so we can't do, we can't make that change. So it's a concern.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Support comes from Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to sustainable and sound conservation of the state's forests, which support more than 41,000 Missouri jobs, resulting in a $10 billion industry. Choosewood.com.
And we're back on Politically Speaking. I'm Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host, St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum. And our guest today is Democratic Representative Ashley Bland-Manlove, who represents the 26th District, which covers part of Kansas City. Let's get back into it. We're talking about Amendment 3, which will be on the ballot in November. If you had the opportunity to craft a legal marijuana system in the way that you see fit, what would it look like? A big ask, I know.
No, it would be across the board automatic expungements paid for, to include cannabis and paraphernalia charges. I don't want to let people out who are violent criminals. So I wouldn't let gun charges out. You'd have to do your time or whatever that looks like. But basically anybody else, that part is gone. It would have programs that would either help those who are economically disadvantaged and help them on the front end with some type of loan. You know, basically the Cannabis Freedom Act, that's what it would look like. There would be, in the Cannabis Freedom Act, I actually created a DBE, disadvantaged business enterprise designation. So we have, you know, veteran-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses. Well, the other one is economic disadvantaged businesses. So I created one of those kind of programs, you know, so making sure that, you know, everybody gets a crack at this, you know, American dream that we're talking about, with boots and straps included. And, you know, just, yeah, it'd basically be the Cannabis Freedom Act with all of our ideas together. So it would look like an increase in workforce development. It would look like repair for those who have been harmed by the war on drugs. And it would look like generational wealth for those who have historically been left out of all of the industries that have boomed and grown within the U.S. at least.
What would you think would be some of the benefits of having a system where licenses are not substantially limited?
The benefit to no quote unquote caps on is that it's a free market. You know, Republicans like to talk economics a lot, and they always say, well, it's a free and fair market. Well, it's not a free and fair market if not everybody can get into it and not everybody has access to it. That's the free part. And so that changes quality standards and makes them be higher. That changes price points and makes them be lower. Normally opens itself to a more diverse pool of people to get that product from. also. So it's actually a win-win-win. And if I can hop back on that question, what would my legislation look like? The revenue would go to either schools or roads. You know, one of these lists that Missouri is, you know, bottom one or two on. It would go to that, where this one, it's a slush fund that goes, that's under the name of veterans, and a bit of expungement and a bit of admin fees. And then public defenders are a last thought, but a lot of that still has to be appropriated through the legislature. So we don't even know if that money will actually go where it's supposed to go.
So I was recently in Oregon, and one of the things I noticed, because I was on the Oregon coast, I was not in Portland. So this was like rural Oregon. There was like a marijuana dispensary literally on every corner. And I'm going to just assume, and I'm not an expert on Oregon marijuana, but the system is a lot less tightly regulated. And some would say that's a good thing because that would promote competition, more opportunities for people to get into the industry. But I could also see a downside that if you flood the market, especially with dispensaries, that it's going to cause people that put up all of this money to get into this industry to go out of business because there's just too many, the market's oversaturated.
What capitalism is. It allows the market to self-correct. So yeah, it comes out all flooded and then only the strongest survive. So those will be the people with the best quality and the lowest price. And so that's a risk that happens in business, period. Whatever investment you make, there's always the risk that it won't work. So if you are concerned about that, you're not a good investor and you should try some other area. But that is sometimes what happens. And you can see that in Denver too. There, from my observation, there's like a dispensary on every corner. But I think that comes when the market regulates out. And so a lot of those will end up closing. And then if you have, you know, really strict guidelines around your product, which we tried to put into the Cannabis Freedom Act, that gets a lot of those weaker players out of there as well. So some of those start to close after a little while.
Do you think that Missourians are ready to legalize marijuana for adult use?
I think they are. My concern hasn't really been if this initiative petition was going to pass or not. It was just letting people know what was in it. Because when you have a broad title that says Legal Mo 2022 and your symbol is a cannabis flower, that's a great messaging point. They did really good on that. And so it makes everybody think, okay, this is going to work and we're going to have cannabis and it's going to be for everybody. Let's go. And that's not actually the case. And that's a little deceiving. So I have always been actually kind of confident that it was going to pass based off of that. And then that's why I started making so much noise, because I was like, we're going to put these prohibitions into our constitution. And I don't think that's actually what people want to do.
How has kind of that effort been on kind of raising awareness about the problems with this amendment?
I think it's gone surprisingly well, actually. There's been a lot of news coverage on both sides of the state, and even down in the Springfield area, I've seen an article or two. So there's been a lot of coverage about this. I just wish everybody would get this excited about the midterms, you know, and when it's not a wedge issue like, cannabis or abortion or something like that.
What would you say to someone who feels like marijuana is a dangerous drug that should remain illegal?
You know, how many people just died off of the opioid epidemic? So everything is about moderation. And, how many people have died from liver disease from drinking? So everything has its downside, whether it's, you know, given to you by the doctor or something that's already established as legal. So that's on the person. There are a lot of health benefits, believe it or not. And a lot of these studies say, cannabis can interact with schizophrenia. And it can. And so can Tylenol, you know? So there's a lot of people are scared because it's something new. And, you know, health issues and crime issues come with all kinds of industries. And it's us, it's up to us to be responsible adults. This is why this is for 21 and over. You know, it's up to us adults to make those proper decisions for ourselves. And I really don't like other people telling me what to do with my body. You know, unless it's a real public health thing that can kill millions of people.
You mentioned that State Representative Ron Hicks, a Republican from St. Charles County, who, by the way, Sarah did an entire podcast with him about the legislation that the representative is talking about, you know, spearheading the drive to legalize adult use marijuana in the legislature. And that it brings up another thing that comes to mind. Like, I've been covering Missouri politics for 16 years. If you would have asked me 16 years ago that there's going to be widespread support among Republicans to legalize marijuana for adult use, I would have said, you're crazy. Like, the attitudes on this issue have changed dramatically. And I'd be interested to hear your take on why things have changed so much.
Well, I don't think that things have changed so much. As we were not able to get a hearing or get it brought up on the floor, and we had to grind through the hearings. I didn't even think it would get a hearing. And then it got a hearing. So I think that personally, just everybody's kind of thoughts and have changed, whether that's to the good or bad about cannabis. But outside, you know, what that looks like on a vote, on a roll call vote, is a very different thing. So that's why the Republican had a hard time getting his bill through the all Republican legislature. But attitudes are changing, and it appears to be a generational divide. There are still those who grew up, you know, wacky tobacco causes schizophrenia, and you kind of can't break that because that's what's ingrained into them. You know, kind of like, never mind, I won't say that. But so you can't break them of that. So, you know, as these next couple of classes come into the legislature, I think we might then start seeing some shifts.
My final question for you is, let's just say either Amendment 3 passes or it fails, but something that you want ends up passing in 2 years. Do you think that's going to spark discussion about legalizing other drugs which are currently illegal but may not be illegal in 4 to 6 years?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about science is that it keeps going and we keep improving and we keep learning. So, you know, I would hope that it would have positive effects on any policies that we saw were regressive and we now want to make progressive. So, you know, it proves that you will have to fight, and it can take time, but, you know, with some diligence, and some good science, things can come forward. I'm assuming you're talking about like psilocybin and other things that have been legalized, on our coasts.
The Economist is actually just wrote out, The Economist, which is a news, I think a magazine, just put out an editorial that cocaine should be legalized. You know, I don't think we're at that point yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if there may be a broader push to make completely decriminalize drugs for various reasons. But
right, and you know, I don't know about you know, cocaine specifically. I don't, outside of an energy drink, you know, I don't see what other kind of health benefits come from that. Where with your mushrooms and your psilocybins, there has been other forms of relief and anxiety and, you know, actually helping with some mental disorders, kind of restructuring the brain. I don't know what it'll do for that, but I hope that it does give people the blueprint to see that we can think that something was a great idea and then change our minds based on science and history and social justice and those things that really matter to the human race, not just capitalism.
Well, thank you so much, Representative, for joining us on the podcast to talk about this topic. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. You can find all of our work at stlpr.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Sarah K. Kellogg. Jason, where can people find you on Twitter?
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Representative, where can people find you on the internet where you want to be found?
I'm actually more on Facebook. Sorry, guys. It's Representative Ashley Bland Manlove, the whole thing. It's a lot. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Or you can just like Google me, and most of my pages are Manlove for Missouri on the other social medias.
All right. Sounds great. Until next time, so long.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.